This is episode number 26 of the Big Web Show, Everything Web That Matters. This whole show is hosted by Jeffrey Zeldman and Dan Benjamin. That's me. And this episode is brought to you by the .tv domain name. In the age of the iPhone and the iPad, video is the easiest way of projecting yourself and your point of view online. With your own .tv domain name, you can amplify and extend your own conversation and let the whole world know you mean business about video. Check them out at getseenon.tv/bigweb. And also by typekit.com, the easiest way to use real fonts on your website. With an affordable Typekit subscription, you'll get access to over 4,000 amazing fonts for just a few bucks a month from houses like Adobe, FontFont, Process, and more. And it's all standards compliant, which you know Jeffrey Zeldman demands. Visit them at typekit.com. Hey, Jeffrey, how are you today?
I am so good, Dan. How are you?
Doing well. It's good to be here with you. And let's just cut to it. We've got Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah, we got Gary Vaynerchuk. That's really it. We don't even have to talk. We've got him.
We've got him. Well, we had him, and then we lost him, and he's coming back, and that's how this works. Okay. And we'll bring him in.
While you're bringing him in, I'll talk about him.
Yes, you talk about him. Even though he's not here, we'll still introduce him.
Okay. Since he's not here, he can't hear me. So Gary Vaynerchuk is a lumberjack I think everyone in the audience knows who Gary is. He's the author of Crush It, a book. And I really want to talk about that, too. Because there's a lot of people having a hard time right now. And Gary has found a way to basically leverage the platform that we're all building to find success, happiness, and create happiness with others. And I think that's an amazing message I'd like to hear more about. He's also the founder of Vaynermedia, with his brother AJ, who we want to hear more about, because AJ's always in the background. I get this Smothers Brothers picture, and like, Mom always liked you best, and I want to know why. We always hear about Gary. We don't hear enough about AJ, so we're going to have to hear about that. He's the creator of Wine Library TV. He's on TV all the time. He's been on Conan and Fox Business News and CNN and just about everything you can imagine. And, you know, I'll just start with this. I knew something had changed. I was in Penn Station on my way to meet a client somewhere and, you know, taking a train to meet a client. And I passed the little bookstore. And it's not a real bookstore. It's just a little train station bookstore, right, where they have, like, they're not going to have long tail books. They're not going to have obscure books. They're going to have best sellers, only best sellers. And there's a giant poster, right? and there's a giant poster, and it's not a poster of Dan Brown. It's not a poster of the guy, I always forget the guy's name, the guy who wrote Blink. It's not that guy.
Malcolm Gladwell.
It's not Malcolm Gladwell. It's Gary Vaynerchuk. My jaw dropped, you know, and soon after that, also 37 Signals book broke huge in the same way. But it's just like, that was the first time I've seen one of us, right? One of the people of the internets, yep, take it from these 5,000 people know who I am to hello universe. And I'm very curious to know how you did that. So let's welcome to the show, Gary. And it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, and guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Cool. And how did you explain a little bit how you create this snowball that keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and how you do that with the internet?
Yeah. So, you know, I think what has helped me, Jeff and Dan and everybody who's listening, is that I come from a business background, right? So I've always been entrepreneurial. I've been practicing business my whole life, lemonade stand, baseball cards. So that Hudson News thing that you saw, Zeldman, was, you know, something I worked on 6 months before my book came out. I said I wanted to meet the CEO of Hudson News, and you know, HarperCollins made that happen, and I started biz devving and just hustling. And so I think that here are the two things that I've been good at. One is the big level stuff like that, making big stuff like that happen. You guys might remember when I first hit Conan. That was 2007. There wasn't a whole lot of video bloggers hitting late night Conan O'Brien shows. So I'm good at that big stuff. And then what I think is probably the core of my success is I've been really good at the small stuff. And so, Zeldman, you might remember when you saw that, you were impressed. But don't forget, you tweeted out that you were a little bit worried about the message I had on that creative, remember?
Yeah, like that. And you responded like,
I was going to fix your business. Yeah, and then I replied to you like pretty darn quickly. So and we had our conversation, and instead of maybe that becoming a negative and you saying, Gary's kind of cheesy, and you know, I got to articulate at least what my thought process was. Whether I was right or wrong is kind of irrelevant. The fact of the matter is, I was human, and it wasn't like, I think I'm a big shot. And I think that's really what I focus on.
Yeah,
big stuff. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I'm sorry to interrupt. I can't.
No.
As some people, I can't see you. You can't see me. So sometimes we're going to step on each other. But I have heard from many, many people, you don't let a message go by. If someone emails you, and I mean, you are one of the busiest people on earth right now, but no matter how busy you are, if someone emails you, tweets, whatever, you respond. And that is huge. And I don't know many people at any level of success who can do that. And I think that's got to be a huge part of your success and something we could all learn from and emulate.
You know, it's a huge part of my success. The numbers are getting worse and worse. I'm starting to really fall behind on email, though I do hundreds and hundreds a day. I'm really strong on Twitter because it's tight and quick. You know, I'm not getting a thesis emailed to me on Twitter, you know. But what I will tell you is this, Jeff, I think more importantly than learning from me on that, I don't think it's for everybody, right? It's not like, okay, here's the secret. Let's engage with everybody. I think it fits my DNA. You know, what you guys know about me or what you've heard, and Dan knows a little bit better because I've engaged more with him, but you know, you and I, Zelman, have been able to engage quite a bit on Twitter in different formats, is I just really like people more than probably anybody who's watching this right now or you two guys. I just do. I mean, it's just the way it is. And so that like for people that is probably unhealthy and too far to an extreme is something I've embraced instead of saying, wow, I'm wasting all this time engaging with people that, you know, may not move the needle or you know, I get crazy when I hear people saying people that aren't significant or don't mean anything. You know, I don't have a filter between who's an internet celebrity or a real celebrity versus somebody who hit me up who has one Twitter follower. So I made my maybe weakness, which is my lack of filter and my lack of scalability, I made my weakness my strength. So I went completely the other way, which is I'm just going to go full throttle to something that's already natural to me. And I think people need to pay attention to their strengths. It's something I really enjoy. I just really, really like people.
Is there do you foresee a point where it won't scale, where you'd have to, I mean, I can't picture you actually. We all know there are some celebrity Twitterers like who actually have their stuff's ghostwritten, right? And you obviously couldn't do that. But what happens if you are getting 1,000 messages a day or 10,000 messages a day when, you know, what happens if you need to take a week off? How do you manage vacations now?
Yeah, I mean, I do take a week off. And my last vacation is the best one I ever had with my wife. I didn't bring computers even. I was just gone off the grid. I think here's what happens. I will never change. And listen, I want to buy the New York Jets. I want to get as big and as, you know, I'm not scared to say I want to get as big or as famous or as powerful as anybody can get. I mean, it's something I want to do because I don't want to abuse it or do anything bad with it. I want to win. I'm competitive. Business is a game for me. And so winning and being successful is part of that. But I will never stop. And I think what people misunderstand is that effort is grossly underestimated. Think about what you said, Zelman. And I think you, I'm so freaking pumped you said it because it's like the perfect case study. You didn't say I, and you did experience it when the book thing, and we've talked about, you put up some good posts and I've interacted to it at times, but you, like you said, you've said, I've heard it from a lot of people, and these are people within your social graph, people that you respect, people that you know are, look at, I'm a funny kind of character, man. I'm a massive over-the-top extrovert. I'm not even convinced that either one of you didn't think I was a jerk-off dickhead first became aware of me. You know, I get it. You know, the fact that I've been so embraced in a very zen, authentic community is kind of almost a chuckle because I'm a very animated, over-the-top character and I'm convinced that 90% of the people right off the top are like, is this guy for real? Like, what's really happening here? Now, what it gets important is when I prove my merit and I really do care and I do have the chops and I do come through and I do give a shit. Now all of a sudden, Zelman, the reason you believe it is because three or four people within your social graph that you know are not full of crap, that you really do know, have told you, man, you know, nothing for nothing, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of conversations in the internet world and the wine world where the conversation starts with, what about that Gary Vaynerchuk? What a douchebag, or is he for real, or that's a salesman, or he's a self-promoter. And then quickly in that little circle, somebody goes, you know, I got to tell you, I've spent some, you know, time with him. He's a pretty good dude. I'm going to win that game. It's just going to take me a long time and a lot of effort. Do you know what I mean?
I do. There are self-promoters and self-promoters. There are self-promoters who rub me the wrong way, and I don't know what they're doing differently than you. And then there are people like you where it's just part of who you are, and it's kind of cool, and it's impressive. And I'm a self-promoter too, just not at that level.
Sure. You know? And I think that it comes down to the fact that, you know, self-promotion is something that people can struggle with, and I get it. What I think, What I think is important is, you know, a self-promoter who's a dick is a dick. A self-promoter who's an awesome guy is an awesome guy. I just firmly believe that.
We had on our show last week, Karen McGrain, who has done amazing stuff on the web for almost 20 years, and not that many people in our audience had heard of her because she's the opposite of that. And I asked her why she was, so reluctant to self-promote. And she said, because she's from Wisconsin.
You know, I think that's a good point. And I think, you know, whether it's Wisconsin, I think it has a lot more to do with her DNA. I'm from Babrusk, Russia, right? Where everybody kept their mouth shut. And I grew up in an Eastern European household where my parents value secrets and keep it tight and don't let the government find out, because that's the Soviet mentality. But that wasn't going to work for me because of my DNA. I know some massive extroverts from Wisconsin. I don't think she firmly meaned it. I think it comes down to your DNA and your upbringing, your parents, your area, and what you're comfortable with. Here's what I find interesting. I feel that somebody like me, who's a massive extrovert, puts themselves so much more out there. I find that when you dig deep, extroverts are pretty interesting because they're aware that they're going to be poked and prodded and investigated and looked deeper into. And you know, you got to really like it's unbelievable to me how good of a human being I am, because I know I'm so out there and doing all this kind of stuff in comparison to if I was a little more private, the kind of quote unquote things I could get away with. Do you know what I mean?
I do
a lot of business deals, and people a lot of time are, you know, want me to consult or invest. And I'm like, I hope you understand that, like, if you go out and say I'm a dick and I didn't bring anything to the table, I'm out of business. I mean, that's my business. I am me. I mean, I've got to be so darn good. I'm in the over-delivering business.
How does VaynerMedia work? Is it a front for, is it basically, I mean, do you have lots of employees? Are there other people somehow creating a Vaynerchuk-like experience, or is it a shell for your consulting business? How does that work?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think that VaynerMedia is a real business. We have 20 full-time employees. Obviously, it's built on the back of my equity and my vision of how brands should engage. I think we're living through the humanization of business. My new book in March coming out called Thank You Economy really taps into this. But you said a funny thing. You said, is it a front? And in some ways, it is a little bit of a front. I very much felt that I needed to round out my entrepreneurial chops with a lot more corporate America DNA and culture and understanding. And, you know, I want to punch myself in the face, like that style, by doing client work. You know, I hate it. At the same token, I'm learning a lot. Go ahead.
And you love people. I find it, and doing client work, loving people is a huge part of that. Like
huge.
If you don't love people, it's hard to be good at client work.
You're right. And that's what's kind of making us survive. At the same token, as an entrepreneur that's always executed, I love the thought of waking up in the morning, brushing my teeth and said, you know what, I'm going to do a wine video blog, and not having to show the ROI to anybody of how it's going to work, just doing it and then winning, right? I don't like the speed of what client work is, especially when you consult and you try to push them in a direction that's uncomfortable and new. So it's frustrating because you want to win and then your client holds you back. You know, I mean, that's definitely something for me, where if I was a designer or developer, there's other hurdles. But with strategy, it's like, okay, let's go here. Guys, like last year, guys, mobile. And now they're all like, oh, maybe we should do something with mobile. No shit, Sherlock. We talked about it 18 months ago. You know what I mean? So, VaynerMedia is a real business. We're honing in on what we do best. We're taking a line you've already used, Zelman, which is no engagement left behind. We think that creating context with people is very important. We know how we built the NHL's Twitter following. It was by engaging, not spending against it. And I think we're living through a very substantial time where we've accepted the ability to have a relationship with a brand. And I think that's very powerful. The fact that I'm willing to have a relationship with Dasani Water or with Apple or with Nike is a big deal. And the brands that realize they need to become human and not talk down to people or shove their message, but humanize themselves, are going to win. And that's what we're trying to bring into the clients that we have, that sensibility.
Do they? Do you recommend that they always have a person out front, like you or like Steve Jobs at Apple? Or what about companies that are so... Yeah, okay, go ahead.
I go the other way. I wish I was a product. I wish there could be 20 people doing my engaging for me right now, right? A human brand, a personal brand, has a much more difficult time winning in this new world, in my opinion, at some level, in a certain way, that a brand does. I love the fact that we can put 45 people that are passionate about Campbell's soup behind the Campbell's logo and engage with people authentically. Lady Gaga and me and Chad Ochocinco and you and Dan Cederholm and, you know, Steve Jobs, it's much harder because when I hear that somebody tweets on behalf of somebody like you brought up earlier, there's a little upchuck going on in my stomach, you know?
Absolutely. I have the feeling Dan Benjamin wants to ask something.
I don't want to jump in here, but I will tell you something, Gary, and Jeffrey touched on this at the beginning of the show, and I just wanted to kind of go on the record. We talked about something like this a little bit earlier in our pipeline interview, but I think it's like even more now. Was reminded of this. You ever seen the movie Solitary Man with Michael Douglas in it? Okay, and it, basically in this movie, long story short, he becomes this sort of baron of car sales, for long story short. But I mean, he was on the cover of Forbes and things like that. And later on, he loses his fortune, long story short, and winds up having to go to work for his college buddy, who's played by Danny DeVito. And Danny DeVito says that, you know, he's talking to Michael Douglas and he's saying, you know, man, when you were on the cover of Forbes, he's like, I felt like one of us had made it. And I think that's kind of what Jeffrey was saying. And I think there's something about you that it feels very much you're one of us, you know, like you came up through the same ranks. You were like just a guy for a while. And now you've kind of transcended being that just a guy, and you've moved. And I think that's, to me, in the audience watching you, it felt like that kind of happened when you started showing up on like TV shows, real TV shows, not the TV shows that you were making yourself, which are, you know, how you kind of got to the bigger ones. And now you're doing radio. And before, so like, I really want to talk to you about your book, but before that, I love talk radio, and now you're like, you're doing it. So tell me about that. How did that happen?
Let me go back to a point, and then I'll talk to you about Sirius, which, by the way, airs tonight and has been moved because we've been so ridiculously successful from 10 to midnight to 8 to 10. So I'm pumped about that because West Coast for wine and tech is huge, and now I have the 5 to 7 slot.
Oh, so that's the drive time slot for them. That's huge.
Huge for me. But let me tell you something that you hit on. As you were saying that, like, one of us made it and it feels good, it was funny what was going through my body, which is that the biggest thing that drives me to want to become ridiculously big, like the guy, and do television and win at television, the only thing that drives me for television is that I know that I will not change. The reason people feel good about me growing or making more happen is that because I don't change the way I am, it's still the engagement, and then it's like your buddy's winning. Like, you know, the person you most want to win is like your friend, because you know he won't change on you. Like, the graph gets smaller when you become Justin Timberlake or Lady Gaga, right? It just gets smaller. I have a employee at VaynerMedia who was really good friends with Matt Ryan, the quarterback of the Falcons, because he was a basketball player at BC. They were like solid friends. Now that Matt's like this big football star, he's not in that loop anymore. He doesn't have that cell number anymore. I think through things like Twitter and my inbox, people will always have access, and it makes it more fun for me. The biggest thing that drives me is somebody, I want to be Oprah or as big as I can be, because I want everybody to be like, I can't believe that Gary Vaynerchuk now has 40 million people watching his television show. He never sleeps, but he still just at tweets me and he still gives a crap, and he remembers my girlfriend's name. The feeling I get when people are stunned that I didn't sell out is like a drug to me. I love that because I want to prove that it can be done. I want to rebrand celebrity at some level in our society. It is a secret thought in my mind. You know?
But at some point, though, doesn't that become impossible? I mean, doesn't it become impossible to reply to everybody?
Yes, I'm not doing it now. I mean, I'm not replying to everybody, but I'm replying to such an obscene amount that people know the effort is there. And I'm going to say it again. And people are not attaching to it, though I did see somebody retweet it. I wish everybody who watches this would retweet it because I want people to understand. Effort is underrated. Dan, it took 7 months for me to do Pipeline with you, right?
Right, yeah.
But we communicated the whole time.
Sure.
There was no radio silence. That was effort. Yeah, I could have let it sit in my inbox, right?
Very true, very true.
Effort is underrated. Effort is underrated. Like, the bottom line is, if you care and you try, if I'm answering 400 people a day, you can go to my Ustream feed and see it. And again, when Zelman's in a little cocktail party at a tweet up or at home with four or five buddies or working on a project and says something, people are like, no, I got an email from him 2 days ago. You did? You know, and it becomes this thing. I just think effort's underrated. And so when I have no time, I'll make time. So I'll do one, you know, if you end up doing five or six less things and you just engage, things will happen. And that's what I focus on. I do more things than ever. I sleep less than ever. I have a 17-month-old, so I spend more time with family than ever. I make time to watch every play of the New York Jets. And if my community and the people that helped grow me, because at the end of the day, it's a community thing, right? Like, me tweeting out this show, I know that people are going to be like, oh man, 5x5, these guys are awesome. Let me start following this. Like, you're going to have people watch every episode after this because of this engagement. On the flip side, there's a lot of people now getting a different look at me that didn't have this kind of view on me because of this. And it's just this community. And I just feel enormous. I feel enormous gratitude and a tremendous, almost uncomfortable responsibility to win for our community and to give back to our community and to just be a good dude.
All right. All right. I hear all that and it's great. I want to ask you if you feel something that I often feel, which is guilt for friends who aren't doing as well, friends who aren't as successful. I have some, you know, friends or relatives who are really talented, work really hard, put in a lot of effort.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, it isn't working out for them. And does your success ever create sort of a gap between you and a friend?
No, and I'll tell you why. And I mean it. And maybe there is, and I don't see it, but I'm so psycho aware of this stuff, Zelman. You know why? Because the second my friend opens his mouth or her mouth or relative or anybody and says, you're so lucky you have this. You know what I mean, right, Zelman? When there's a comment or you could feel it in your gut, something weird's brewing about success. You know what I mean? I start painting a very clear picture of why they're winning too. When my friends are like, oh, Gary, you made it. Like, wow, what the hell? Like, I hate this job. I'm like, yeah, Keith, but, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but you're home at 5 p.m. and you, Tom, Steve, and Johnny are going to the bar watching Monday Night Football. And, you know, your little 18-month-old at home, Sandy, that gorgeous little girl, you spend every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with her. And so I have this unbelievable feeling outside of death and crazy, like, natural disasters and, you know, a couple of other things. But I don't know, you know, I feel life is massively fair in when it comes to business. And what I mean by that is I'm not, just because I have stuff or acclaim or visibility or monetary success doesn't mean I'm a happier human being. Some of the, probably the 8 most happy people I know are probably in the bottom 15% financially of people I know. I just think we need to look at it at a world view. I mean, we can look at it, I don't feel guilt because I have more dollars. I'm wondering if my friends feel more guilt because they have more time to play wiffle ball and in high school and college when I worked every freaking hour of my life and they were banging chicks at the Jersey Shore. Did they feel guilty for me? You know, and it's not a me against them. I'm thrilled. I mean, it's circumstance. You know, I mean, guess what? I wish I was born in America so I could run for office. I desperately love, you know, politics, but because I can't be president, I'm not going to do it. And you know what? I wish I was looking at AJ. I wish I was the third brother, not the first brother, because we were so un-Americanized. I didn't understand stuff and didn't live it up to a lot of potential. I mean, there's so many dynamics. It's just one little element of it. And I got to tell you, more money, more problems. You know, P. Diddy and Biggie, there's a lot of value to that. I'm not so sold. I'm not so much more happy today than I was 10 years ago because of finance. I'm more happy because I have a tremendous wife and I have an unbelievable little daughter. And all that money I think really does is give you freedom to do what you want. And it's been pretty much proven that that number is not so crazy. I don't know. I think, as you can tell, I think about this stuff quite a bit. The answer is no. And it's because they're winning in a lot of different ways than I am.
That's really great. That's really great. Let's talk about the book.
You want to go back to the radio? You want to go to radio, Dan? I'm sorry.
We definitely need to talk about the book, but I've got to hear about the radio show. You're doing a radio show. It's on Sirius Radio. You mentioned it's 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern time now. Mm-hmm. So how did this whole thing happen? And is this part of your path, or is this part of one of the goals that you've had?
So, you know, somewhere along the line, and you've said it to me and other people said it to me, I've always had it in the back of my mind as I started putting myself out there that like radio might be a very good medium for me, maybe even better than television. I think you even said that once as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was like, you know, radio is pretty legit. I like it, da da da, you know. And so, you know, Sirius reached out and they're like, we would like to develop a show around you. And, you know, I like the brand equity of having a show on Sirius. I feel like, you know, it's not like the creme de la creme. There's some pretty funny characters that have shows on Sirius, but you know, it's not like everybody can do it. So it elevates your brand and the way people look at you. And plus it was an opportunity for me to reach an entirely new audience. I do see an opportunity for me to Ryan Seacrest it, you know, that radio is one of the pillars of, you know, again, I have this insane like ADD of like, do I build my brand or do I build, you know, a startup? I'm itching. You know, listen, and you're closely associated to this. My effort to build my brand didn't allow me to build the startup that I was most excited about in my whole life, which is Corked, right? So that was a loss because I focused so much on my own brand. You know, I'm starting to itch lately to build a startup because I just love building product. You know, building Wine Library as a business and then building Wine Library TV and has just been so rewarding, and being a personal brand is so difficult. You put so much on your back, but you know, so I'm kind of running parallel and I'm doing all these things. I'm investing, so I stay very close to the startup scene. But the fact of the matter is the radio could, if I end up going, you know, there's going to be a day and point where I'm going to have to go more on my brand or make a startup play and shut the brand down or windle it down. If I stay on personal brand, I see radio being a substantial part of it because I think I'm really good at it naturally because I did so much Ustream and I did so much of this kind of stuff that it just feels natural. And I really see it being a part of things. And, you know, and again, it's a funny thing. Like your passion for radio like pumps me up, right? Like, I mean, you know, I get very excited by my friends' passions, and I like radio. I like engaging with people. And radio is just another way to do that.
So why radio first and not TV? Because I know that you...
Because I'll tell you right now.
Yeah.
Because I've had a lot of TV offers and I'm dealing with a big one right now, a big, big one. I'm so not in control in television, it scares the crap out of me.
Really?
There's too many layers. Yeah, there's the production company, there's my agents, there's the network, there's the advertisers that eventually pay for me to be on TV. Radio was a very simple deal. And obviously all the stuff I do for myself is the most simple. So the same frustrations I have with client work is even scarier with television because so many more people are in control of my brand. And right. That scares the piss out of me. Just the absolute piss out of me. At the same token, I know that I can be a major television star. Is that a douchey thing to say? Sure, I don't care. Here's what I know. Every time I enter a new genre, people are affected by my personality. That's not because I'm cool. It's because I got lucky. My parents gave me the proper DNA. I don't know. So I know I can win because people are going to love me and people are going to hate me. And that's what wins. So on paper, I know if I pick the right kind of show that I could really win on television. And I don't think there's any confusion that if you become a TV star, that's a big deal in our society. And I'd like to use that as a launching pad and leverage for me to do the things I want to do, which is buy the New York Jets.
So go ahead, Jeffrey.
No, you go ahead.
What kind of, I mean, I'm thinking as you're describing this, you're like, okay, you want the right kind of deal. What is the kind of deal, or can't you talk about it? Is it?
No, I can talk about it. I just, my hope is that television loses its equity in our society and the deals become better for the talent, right?
You want the Orson Welles deal. You know, Orson Welles came to Hollywood. He had Final Cut for his first movie. You know, he wrote the script. He picked the co-writers. He picked the cast and everything else. And
I want to keep building my brand so that as my equity goes up, if Google TV and Apple TV and Voxy and things like that disrupt television enough, is there a perfect point where I'm on the rise and TV's enough on the decline that they've got to give me a deal that is just, listen, I wouldn't have wrote books if I didn't get my HarperCollins deal that gave me 50-50 on the back end. That was a very unusual book deal, you know? You know, I mean, because I like betting on myself. And so I want a deal that I don't deserve based on my brand equity in the television world and overall in society today. And so that makes it difficult, right? I want to get paid or get the deal that, you know, it's like being a sixth grader and demanding the NFL to give you a number one pick contract right now. You've got the potential, kid, but that's crazy. Why would we do that? And so I understand. I'm not mad at anybody in the TV world for not giving me the kind of deal that I want. And then there's the other part, which is I can suck it up, carve out enough exits for me, and then adjust a second time. And that's been something I've been giving more and more thought to. I've been able to carve out more and more things in my way and giving me more and more exits and quicker exits. And that's the other alternative and probably the more feasible, practical version of what gets me on television eventually.
50-50 is the deal we give our authors on A Book Apart, and it's been very successful so far. But we're a niche publisher. We're publishing for web designers, and our background is the internet, and that's where you have total control. That's, you know, the internet is where you make your website the way you want to, say what you want to say. You don't care if it's popular or not, and if you're lucky enough to strike a chord, you decide whether you're going to keep going with that or do something different. Right. So, but when you move into something more mainstream like TV, of course you're going to lose a lot of control. And I don't know if I were you, I'd be nervous about that, because if you do a website for a client, there's also all kinds of variables that could change it. And maybe you're not thrilled with the end result, but it's the client's brand. But if your website, but if something is about you, it represents you. And it gets deformed, and people are going to say, oh, Gary's changed. Gary's not the same. Boy, I thought this guy was funny. I thought he was smart. This show is a little stupid. They don't know that it's, you know, it's stupid because of the producer, or it's stupid
that's
because
right.
of the... So I would be nervous about that. I think that's
Jeff,
as far from the internet as you can get.
Jeff, I've turned down insane shit. I've had opportunities to work with some of the biggest shows in the world. They were, you know, things like Top Chef that would have built my brand overnight. I mean, I could have done a ton of stuff. And I'll be honest with you. My biggest failures are probably the things I've passed on because I was worried about those control mechanisms. You know what I mean, Zelman? Like everything you just said, I bet you my biggest on paper mistake to date, business-wise, is not the things that people think, like Corked, or maybe I should have just stuck to wine and become the biggest guy there and I'm stretched too thin, or why did I do VaynerMedia for client work? I know a lot of my smartest fans that, you know, smartest friends, like high level guys, like that's not scalable. What is he doing? I don't think it's any of those things. I bet you it's the television deal that could have, you know, that could have been the launching pad for so many other things, or some of these other opportunities that I've been given in different countries to make lots of dollars and build my brand there. And that's okay with me. You know, here's what I know. I've learned a lot by saying no over the course of the last 3 years. And I definitely feel like I'm closer than ever to maybe doing something. At the same token, if I never end up on television, that's fine as well, too.
So tell us about this book. We get to hear about this book. What's going on?
Yeah, so the new book, The Thank You Economy, is probably, it could end up being the best book I could ever write because I think it's extremely time sensitive. I talk about the humanization of business. I talk about why, you know, if Pepsi gives you a wink or says thank you on Twitter or does something with you on Facebook or on their blog or on Tumblr or Ustream or YouTube or wherever else, because I think everybody's become way too much of a two-trick pony in social and all we hear about is Facebook and Twitter. why creating a relationship, the context of a relationship is so powerful, why I think we're in small town rules, how brands have done it, what people consider social media success that I consider failure. I think we're going to a new economy where marketing is about to get very hard, and if you want to win, you've got to work really hard and you got to get your hands dirty and get into the trenches. I think the economic impact is substantial. I think we're going to listen to our friends. I think search is about to be affected by the social graph. You know, I'd much rather, you know, Dan, I'll be very honest with you. I'd much rather somehow know from you what you think are the best radio shows in the world, not somebody who gamed Google and has good SEO juice. And I think that these kind of elements are coming. I think mobile's impact on decision making at point of purchase is huge, meaning, you know, if I'm about to buy a Pepsi, but I check in at Walmart and they make me buy Coke, how powerful that is. I mean, that's what radio advertising has lived on. You know, when people are driving and about to go to Acme, if they hear ShopRite, they may go there. I mean, you know, point of purchase monetizing and advertising is very powerful. So the thank you economy talks about all these trends colliding, mobile, social, humanization, manners, big box stores, the big year of that. Now are we going the other way, back to small town rules? This all converges and creates a new economy, which I'm dubbing the thank you economy, because it's based on manners and giving a crap, and I think it's going back to the old school. I think what I do today and get accolades for is the only way somebody from 1922 would deal with social media. It's always about the people. We got far away from that, and I think it's coming back.
Tell us, is that small town rules? What you've just described, is that small town rules?
I think so, yes. Yeah, I think small town, a big part of my book is that our grandparents are more prepared to be successful in social media than we are, Jeff. You know, I think it's rude for somebody to say, Zeldman, I love your work, and you not to try to somehow find a way to say thank you. You know? And I understand the scalability issues. Trust me, I do. But I think effort, again, is a intent and effort in a day and age where I think consumers' bullshit radars are incredible, are going to become dramatically more part of the conversation. I firmly believe that.
I agree with you. Now, tell us about a social media success that you think is a failure and why.
So I have one major one, but I can't give it to you because it's the only reason to buy the book. I think there's a lot, actually. I mean, if you read Ad Age on a daily basis, one of the things I'm going to start doing is doing more GaryVaynerchuk.com videos. I think I've been slacking. And what I'm probably going to do, I mean, there's so much, Zeldman, considered success and I think are failures. Now listen, they may be social media success stories, but they're failures in the thank you economy. And what I mean by that is, it may have worked and got more fans for you and caused a lot of buzz, but if you didn't then go into that community, great. It's like this. You open a new restaurant and your marketing guy is unstoppable and he gets 10,000 people to come to the restaurant. If you don't say hello to people when they come in, if you don't serve them good food, if you don't care about them, it wasn't worthwhile, right? I mean, you're not going to retain that customer. And so I view a lot of social media campaigns as really good at getting things to happen, but then in a thank you economy, nobody's doing all the cleanup and all the handholding and all the serious, you know, things that I think need to be done to keep those relationships, not for the short term, but forever.
Now, You're describing everything through the filter of a business relationship where everyone in my social graph is to some degree a customer of mine. Is that how you see it? Is there any other?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm coming from it that commerce is a part of our life. It's one part. I'm only speaking to it. I think, you know, Marshall Fitzpatrick, great writer. You guys know him? He's written for Read Write Web. You know, Marshall's a great guy. He's written for Read Write Web and TechCrunch in the past. He did a little 5-minute rant on some new platform yesterday about, he saw my video about Facebook Places yesterday, and he was like, Gary's so smart. I'm so sad by his thoughts on this. You know, it's not all just about coupons and checking in. And he's 100% right. The problem is that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a very narrow part of our society. I think there's enormous benefits. I mean, I think Misha will go to a better nursery school because of social media than she would have if we were going to be looking it up in dictionaries or, you know, I mean, I just think that there's a lot of other impacts. I just happen to love business. I'm talking about it within business. I never want anybody to be mistaken that I have, you know, I hate when people think like, oh, well, everything is business and everything's going business. No, of course not. But there's business implications. I don't even like the thought of like the thesis, right? Which is that like, manners are now a tactic to get business. I was scared that people would run with that too much with what I'm talking about. It's not about right. that either. It's just, here's what's going to work. And I just hope that people understand that you can't do it as a tactic because people will see right through it. As a matter of fact, everybody has tried to do it as a tactic. Do you know how many spam Twitter programs there are to follow people and auto-respond to them and all this bullshit? No robot and no script and no program is ever going to beat me because people have bullshit radars, people have intuition, and they feel totally different when it's authentic compared to when it's automated. The end.
And that's why John Henry beat the machine.
That's right. I mean, it's going to always happen. It's how we're wired. Our feel towards the human aspects is too powerful. It's what drives us and makes us think. It's what makes our relationships. It's what makes us buy things and what brands we support. The emotional attachment is substantial. It's the cult of Apple is built on. It's why Zappos had success. It's why sports business is such a good business because we have emotion. It's why you, Jeff, I guarantee you and Dan right now and every person listening is watching and buy something strictly because of personal relationship. You're getting your hair cut somewhere. You're buying your groceries somewhere. You're renting your DVDs. You're using an app that you pay for. You bought an iPhone app. There are an enormous amount of things that we spend money on because
almost
of
everything. Yeah. Almost everything.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Even
you know
what I eat. What I eat.
Yeah, man.
My trainer, my friends who are conscious of what they eat, all that, everything.
I firmly believe that. And I think the internet is scaling our opportunity to do that more. Do you know what I mean?
The only thing I miss and is sad, when I was a kid, you could only, like you found out about music just from your friends, right? Maybe you read Rolling Stone, but you basically found out about music or Trouser Press. But you basically found out music because your friend was listening to it and it was cool.
And now there's so many ways. I think that, you know, I think Rolling Stone and MTV had more power of what people listen to than they do today. I think your friends have more of an impact on your music habits. Listen, you may be a certain case where it was that part of your life and you were in school and that's what you cared about and those friends are what you cared about. But I got to tell you, seeing somebody's status update in Facebook or a tweet saying this song's awesome and I've chosen to follow them because there's somebody that's either a friend or an acquaintance, brings a lot more. I discover much more through my social friendships than I used to because the television or a major magazine controlled my mindset much more back in the day.
Yes, I agree with that too.
So Gary, when is this book coming out? How far along are you right now?
I'm wrapping it up and the book will come out March 8th.
March 8th.
Yeah, which is another sucky part of writing things traditionally, right? Like, I'm pretty much done with my thoughts. I've probably had the thoughts for 6 months. Now I got to hold my breath to make sure society doesn't catch up so it becomes lame, right? I mean, just, you know, archaic. I mean, there's no doubt about it. On the flip side, there is a boatload of people that I want to get to hear this message that would not get it any other way than the book, you know? So there's pros and cons to everything. But yeah, it comes out in March.
March. So if people who don't, sorry, Jeffrey, go ahead.
I just going to say, I'm sure it'll be fine, but my first book, Taking Your Talent to the Web, was about how to go from traditional print and art, you know, print design and art direction to the web. And it came out during the .com crash. And I literally saw the crash rushing toward us as I'm halfway through it. And I'm saying to the publisher, do I
this
stop?
Is gonna be bad.
What do we do? And, you know, and anyone who read it liked it. It was a good book, but it was kind of like.
I mean, here's what's awesome. I build businesses, right? Jeff, Dan, I've built successful businesses my whole life, things that have tangible dollars and it's real. It's not big Zen thought processes. I'm very practical when it comes to business. And I'm talking about business in this book and how to build a business going forward. I know I'm way ahead of it. So there could be another .com. By the way, I wish there was a .com crash when the book came out. I got to be really blunt with you. I think when things are bad, the best players win the most. And I like competing in down markets because I've got chops. And, I feel like when things are too good, a lot of B and C players have success, leaving less room for an A player to win.
I started Happy Cog in 1999 during the crash.
Yeah.
There you go. So I totally agree.
Yep.
So Gareth, people want to follow you if they're not already following you on Twitter, Facebook. How do they find you? Where do they go for more Gary?
More Gary. Facebook.com/Gary, G-A-R-Y, is probably the easiest way. You know, allows me to message them in their mailbox. So anybody listening who's never, you know, interacted with me before or used to think I was a jerk and maybe this was a good shed of light on me, I'd love for them to say hey on Facebook.com/Gary, G-A-R-Y. I'd love to say hello.
And they can follow you on Twitter at Gary V with two E's.
Worst move ever. Terrible branding. Double E. Literally the only time I ever did that in my life ends up being Twitter. I was just kind of in a funny, giddy mood and was like doing the silent E thing. You know, nobody should listen to any of my branding advice when you've got a guy who's got double E silent on the end of his username. But, you know, it is what it is.
And then they can hear you on the radio at now 8 p.m. on Thursday nights on which Sirius channel are you on there?
Sirius 108.
108.
8 p.m. Eastern
time.
5 Pacific, yeah.
And Wine Library TV, and is that it? That's it. For only those few things for you. And then the new book.
Oh, there's
coming
more.
Out. There's more.
There's more. But I will say this. I have a very major mobile campaign in 2011. So I would feel like I wouldn't know what I was talking about if I wasn't coming mobile. And it should have happened in this year, but I was too sidetracked. But very mobiled out in 2011, so I'll be looking forward to that as well.
Awesome. Well, on behalf of me and Jeffrey, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. Gary, this was such a great pleasure. Thanks again. Anytime you want to come back, Jeffrey and I would love to have you.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. All Jeff, right, it was really fun to engage with you. I get a lot of Benjamin, but it was fun to do some stuff with you as well.
Yep, pleasure. We still have to go out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Let's paint the town green after a big Jets win. All right. See you guys later.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right, everybody. You guys are both clear. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Gary. Anytime you want to come on any one of these shows, you just tell me when. I appreciate it.
I will. Stay well, guys. Take care. Thank you, guys. Jeff, thanks a lot.
Take care. Pleasure. Take care.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
All right, my friend.
Bye.
See you next week, my friend.
Next week. Thanks again to my co-host Jeffrey Zeldman and to our guest Gary Vaynerchuk. Thanks also to our sponsors GetSeenOn.tv/BigWeb and TypeKit.com. And thanks to you for listening. You can hear previous episodes of this show and learn more about all the other shows that we produce on 5x5.tv. And as always, if you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating it on iTunes. It's probably the best way to help new listeners and maybe old listeners who don't realize how much good stuff there is coming out with guests like Gary are happening all the time. So please do rate the show on iTunes. We sure do appreciate it. And we will see you all again next week. Have a good one.